Pull up a chair, the stories begin. Patrick and Randy are letting you in. From the desert lights where the big names are, it's Big Conversations, Little Bar.
Welcome to Big Conversations, Little Bar, the Coachella Valley's favorite podcast, recorded live at Skip Page's Little Bar in Palm Desert. Get ready for another fascinating hour of meeting people who make the desert city such a spectacular place to be. Now, nestled in their corner booth perch, well lubricated and raring to chat, here's Patrick Evans and Randy Florence.
Thank you, Howard Hoffman. We are here at the Coveted Corner booth at Skip Page's Little Bar for another edition of Big Conversations, Little Bar. I'm your host, Patrick Evans, along with my sidekick, my spiritual guru.
Keep going.
Good friend, our fellow host, and Captain Slick himself, Randy Florence,
thank
ladies.
Thank you for bringing that when we have a 55-year callback. Thank you for that.
I think there are people in the Bay Area who still remember Captain Slick and miss the band and are waiting for the reunion tour.
You think? I feel sure. Is this your way of getting me to go back to the Bay Area?
No, I think we put the...
I'm guessing there's a good chance some of them live here in the Valley.
The hell with the Bay Area. Let's just do the reunion tour. We'll start it at Acrisure.
There's a done.
Fill that joint up.
Can we wrap this podcast up so I can go get into some serious stuff? I want to perform at Acrisure. I want to perform on the Plaza Theater. Can you help me make that happen?
Well, we know but John Bolton.
Do it.
You should do a one-man show.
No, a two-man show. You come out and open up with Summer Winds and then leave. And I'll do 45 minutes of Beach Boys and Elvis.
I thought you wanted to act on the stage of it. Like, you can do, like, reprise some of your roles from...
Some of my cancer patient or suicide role? Yes, it's a comedy.
It's a comedy. It's a lighthearted night of family fun.
All right, well, enough of talking about my acting career.
Thanks. You good?
Things are good. How about you?
Yeah, fine. All right, let's get to our guest. I think it's really important that we get to our guest before this gets any further. Oh, before we get to our guest, though, we want to give a shout out to the McCallum Theater, our presenting sponsor.
We love the McCallum.
Today, and this is a guest that you introduced me to.
So, in May of 25, we're interviewing somebody here, and all of a sudden I look over it, and I see her husband. And this guy is this incredibly good-looking rock star. And he's sitting over there alone. And then a little while later, I hear all this giggling and I turn over and he's sitting next to my wife. And I realize I had almost lost her. And then the show ended and I was able to take her back home. And the person who I almost lost her to is today's guest, Tommy Field. Welcome to the show. You didn't kill me. Thanks. I've insulted you and my wife and the person.
Yeah.
I'm like...
He's also happily married. He wasn't going to steal your wife. I don't know.
There were a lot of things going on that night. Full disclosure, Tommy is married to a former guest of the podcast, Nikki Boyer. And Nikki was even looking over. Kay gets pretty aggressive at times. She's been handsy with you a few times. John had to slap her away.
Tommy, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks,
Tommy Field's our guest today.
It's a fun
an award-winning composer and a rock star and a producer, and you wear many hats.
An actor
hat.
You acted.
But he doesn't really wear many hats because look at that heavy hair.
I want to put a hat on this.
No, you can't do it. Like putting a veil over the Mona Lisa.
We actually could have started the show 10 minutes earlier, but you and I were just both gawking at him the whole time.
That's true. John made him button up his shirt.
That is true. But I noticed he'd taken a bunch of pictures before he asked him.
And he sped them into ChatGPT.
That's hilarious. This happened, man. The stuff that has happened to you and to Nikki, since we sat down here in May, has just been crazy. Really, it's a lot of stuff has exploded for you guys over this last 6 or 7 months.
Been a wild ride, for sure.
Well,
oh my
tell
gosh.
Us a little bit. Back then, you were just trying to, you were getting into the whole desert thing.
Uh-huh.
And now you can't even be here because you're in an award show somewhere yeah. every night.
The award show has been crazy. I'm like so stoked for Nikki and the show, the success of the show, Dying for Sex.
Dying for Sex on FX.
Yeah, it's been incredible to see the success of the show and to see how like the audience has reacted to the show too. It's like Nikki gets thousands of emails or direct messages, Instagram messages talking about how the show has inspired them, whether they've gone through cancer or friends of theirs, family members or whatever, and seeing how, you know, an alternative way of looking at that. The show has just been amazing that a show like that has touched people in such a, like a fundamental way. It's like inspiring to see. And so it's been really cool to see it get acknowledged at the Emmys and...
You know, I think I just saw Variety Magazine named it the number one TV show of the year.
Oh, wow.
But I want to talk about your side of that whole project. So your wife says, I'm starting this podcast with a cancer victim. What was that conversation like? And did you just say, Nikki, you do what you knew Molly, obviously.
Yeah, I knew. I knew Molly back then too. And I love that she was always like a host and voiceover person and did a lot of that. And to see her create shows and head down this path has just been so cool. So I try to be a supportive partner. And, you know, I think it's amazing the work that she's doing. And I'm just so proud of all the stuff she's doing.
Would she come home and talk to you and say, oh my God, you're not going to believe what Molly and I talked about today? Or it was, you guys had talked about it 1,000 times before, so it was old hat.
Yeah, that's a good question, actually. She'd come home and talk about her. We always talk about our days and like how they unfolded and the conversations we had. And Molly would come over to the house and they just had this idea of the show too, once this Molly started heading down this path. So Molly would come over and they would sit at the table and, or Nikki would map out an outline of things that they would talk about for the podcast because they did the podcast first. So I was just... the supportive role was more what I did. Molly, she would always go through her peaks and valleys, like going through the cancer journey.
Waking up with clown makeup behind her ears.
Exactly. Yeah, there were a lot of stories that weren't even told. They were like... But I felt like it was my job to be her support and inspire Nikki to be like, look, go spend time with Molly. Because we were, at the same time, Nikki and I were... had a blended family, so we were raising kids at the same time and figuring out our relationship.
And you had a band together.
We had a band together, yeah. And yeah.
Yep,
we did.
So you weren't apart very often.
Yeah, and we're still not. We were laughing just yesterday. It's like, can you believe how much time we spend together?
Don't, like, wait a minute. Which one of you said that?
She said that.
Let me tell you what that means. Yeah, you're good. Yeah, you
exactly.
You don't want to be, you, as the husband, I think that's a danger zone.
Wow, I can't believe how much time
exactly.
we spend together.
God, we're spending a lot of time together.
Holy cow. Isn't it? Feels like a lot of time to be with you.
You were busy with your career while this was all going on.
Yeah.
So did you have enough hours in a day for all of this stuff?
What's wild, like living in LA and the city, I feel like it vibrates in a different way. So you're just constantly going from one thing to the next. Didn't seem like a big deal, but looking back on it now, living in the desert and having a more relaxed lifestyle, I was like, how did we do all of this?
Like, it just seems like another life.
So
you were having dinner over at the casino the other night. She's a vegan, vegetarian, and you're not. You had about a 50-pound piece of meat on your plate.
And she didn't show hers.
Are you guys finding times alone to get away and go out and do stuff and enjoy being together when you're not in the middle of 5 billion people?
Yeah. Even if we just spend time at home, it's like we watch 90 Day Fiancé and like just ridiculous, mindless programs. It's like, we enjoy that. I don't know. Look, we're really trying to make more of a point to go see movies now. It's like go to the Regal all the time. They're playing the older movies. But we just saw Hamnet last night.
Wow.
You know, together.
Yes.
What a beautiful movie.
Yeah.
We saw that, didn't
I did. I saw portions of it because I got to interview
the two
stars.
Wow.
On the red carpet for the film festival. Wow. That's his gig.
Oh. Yeah.
They were amazing. And I thought, I don't know if you felt the same way. The way he portrayed, we always think of Shakespeare as an old dude, like this bigger than life figure. And he played, obviously he was a young man and a family man and this very tender, sweet, almost naive in some way, but a very human portrayal, I thought, of Shakespeare.
Yeah, that was brilliant.
Yeah.
Her performance too was
she was.
I'm just getting chills, like thinking about like seeing her performance on screen last night. It was like so moving. And was it Max Richter, I think, is the composer on that? Like, the score I thought was just beautiful. And
I love film music. I love movie scores. I would say 75% of the music I listen to is film music. And I love, obviously, John Williams, great composer. I love Jerry Goldsmith's work.
Yeah.
Who were some of your inspirations when you started doing movie work and scoring films?
Some of my inspiration, I definitely would say Alan Silvestri was like Back to the Future.
Back to the Future, yes.
That's a pretty good one.
What, James Horner?
Yeah.
My God, there's so many. Of course, John Williams. But what I think is brilliant about him is, like, obviously his big themes are amazing, but the way he scores a scene was just...
It's like part of the script.
Really is.
Yeah.
Like, it's just incredible. Yeah. I mean, there's so many, right?
Danny Elfman, though.
Danny Elfman, yes.
I would correlate because, obviously, he came from Oingo Boingo and a weird rock and roll background. Yeah. And he does these really lush, amazing scores. And it feels a little analogous to you because you're a rock and roll guy at heart.
Yeah, thanks. I love that it seems like it's an easy transit. Not easy. There's nothing but easy. But like Hans Zimmer was in bands when he was younger. And
the guy from Stray Cats. I remember he went into a lot of that after the band.
Yeah, Mark Mothersbaugh was, what band was he in? I forgot. Devo.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. And
another one we've heard of.
Yeah, exactly.
So how does one get into scoring movies? Did you grow up and would focus on the songs and the music coming out of a movie and think that's what I want to do?
No. You know, it's funny I grew up in the time that I grew up in. It's farm country, small town, Indiana. One stoplight town, Indiana. Like, those options weren't ever really available or discussed, or I don't think anybody really thought, hey, I can do this or whatever. I didn't think that, but I played in bands when I was a kid. And when I came to LA, I was just more focused on playing in bands and playing in rock bands or whatever. But the first job actually I got after I went to music school when I came out here was working in a movie theater. In the theater, taking tickets, like making popcorn. But I saw every single movie for what the time I probably worked there on and off for 4 years. Maybe.
Wow.
I don't even know. So I don't think I was conscious of it at that point, even that, like, I was so focused on being a rock star, like whatever, that was my focus. But I always loved it. I always loved movies and I loved film scores. That's when THX Sound came out, Jurassic Park and shit. It was just always so moving to me. So, like, the actual film scoring part didn't come until later. I've really only been scoring movies for probably, God, what was the first movie I did? Probably 12, 15 years ago, maybe?
Wow.
Something like that.
Yeah.
So,
how long does it take you to score? Most movies these days are running about 90 minutes to 2 hours. How long does it take you to actually score the film?
As long as I have, usually.
This is our deadline, and we expect a score if you expect a check.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
So I like the more time, like, you can really dive in and dig in and create your themes and make it all tie in wonderfully together. And a lot of the TV movie stuff that I do, you have 2 to 5 weeks. Usually is like the time frame, and the 2 week ones are. Can I curse?
Yes.
We're fucking brutal.
Don't say brutal.
Yeah, we can't say brutal, fucking fine. What is your process? Do you sit down at the keyboard and hammer out themes? And
yeah, usually I have a piano in the living room, and then I also have my studio back in a room in the house, and I'll go back and forth between and play with sounds and go back to the piano and noodle around, and something usually comes out. at that point.
Are you watching the product at that time?
Not at that time. I'll just, if I have time before a movie starts, like I'll just sit and try to be creative. That's where I'm at right now. I'm starting a movie here, I think either tomorrow or the next day. And, but I'm just, I read the script. And so I'm, they gave me kind of ideas. It's like Danny Elfman was like the person that they said, hey, we want to score kind of like Danny Elfman for this. And I'm like,
and you're like, wouldn't that be awesome?
I don't know if he's available.
But I love those kind of film scores. So I'm like actually excited for these kinds of movies when they come up, where I'm like, okay, like actually like a style. It's a Halloween movie too, funny enough.
Okay. But, like the scary Halloween movie?
No, it's they want a little spook to it. Danny Elfman, that's why one of their, why he was their reference, I think, because he's brilliant at putting a little spook.
He walks around like that.
Yeah, he does.
Sure. Right. He's got this voice later. Okay, whatever, Danny.
But he also has the fun and the magic element to it too. So it's, I love this.
But you do, I love the process of scoring movie, because at some point you have to, if you're doing it with an orchestra, you've got to have, you're watching the film and you're conducting to the action on the screen, right?
Yeah. I've actually don't do that part of it. I just do this. And if they didn't go do that, then we'll let somebody else like control that.
You have to worry about the orchestra.
Exactly.
Yeah. So let's go. You touched on it. Born in Indiana. Big family, small family?
A younger brother, older sister. So
musical family?
Not really, I wouldn't say. The only real music, we had a big organ in the living room. This double level.
Oh, okay.
That was that had the drum beats like buttons on it. We had one of those in our living room, and my mom would play it every once in a while. She'd have like sheet music, and she'd put up like Walk the Line. I remember the Johnny Cash playing that.
I always think that on the organ is where they should have gone.
I agree. Walk the Line.
Like you hear Walk the Line, like that should really be on an organ.
That'll be the next version of, what did the Johnny Cash do? The Nine Inch Nails song.
Oh, I hurt myself.
Yeah,
hurt.
We'll do that on the organ next time.
I said Ring of Fire. And let's get rid of the mariachi trumpets. And let's that little that would be good on the organ. Good. So that's cool. So your mom was musical.
Yeah, she played around on it. And my grandma, her mom had a piano at their house. So they lived in the country. So there was literally nothing to do. So I would just sit at their piano and make up my own shit.
Did you teach yourself to play piano?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm still not good at it.
Now, you got a couple of songs of the year, so you got to be okay at it somewhere along the way.
I started playing guitar when I was like 11. And so I was really like serious about guitar, more serious about guitar than anything else.
And were you still in Indiana at that point?
Yep.
When did you come out to LA?
When I was, how old was I? 20, maybe? So it's been like 90, 91, maybe? I don't know.
How'd mom and dad feel about that?
You know, it's funny. They surprisingly, they just put me on a plane. They must have been sick of me or something. Put me on a plane and we're like, because they had
one
never,
way ticket.
Exactly.
Go follow your dreams, son.
I think about it because I have two daughters and we have cell phones. We can text and stay in contact nowadays. But back then, there was nothing. And we weren't travelers. We didn't have a lot of money or anything when we were kids. So that was the very first time I'd ever been on an airplane, was flying out of Indianapolis. And the like wind chill was like minus 20. And I landed in Burbank and it was 80 degrees. No place to stay. Like they were just like,
what was the plan?
Yeah. Bring your luggage to the music school, which was Grove School of Music at the time in Van Nuys, and drop your luggage off in the office and go look for apartments. Like there were a couple apartment buildings within the 4 or 5 block radius or whatever. Yeah. In Van Nuys. And Van Nuys wasn't like super great back then.
No. I'm not sure that it's super great now. No, that's right. Not everybody's, hey, we should move to Van Nuys. Apologies to anybody listening, watching in Van Nuys.
Did you spend any time alone growing up?
Any time alone? What do you mean?
You moved out to LA. Yeah. By yourself, right?
With a friend of mine.
With a friend.
He was the drummer that was in the band that I played in back in Indiana.
So you guys were coming out to hit it big in LA.
So, exactly.
Well, tell me about your first, you must have had a band
when you were a kid, like a garage band. Tell me about that.
Yeah. I had a school teacher, I forget what, seventh grade or eighth grade. I think it was eighth grade, that she played in a band's cover band, like in the local area with her. So she got a friend of mine who played drums and me on guitar and sang. And we played the King and Queen dance at eighth grade.
That was the first gig. I was like,
yeah. So she inspired all that. And then me and a few other friends got a band together. So we just started playing cover songs and birthday parties, fairs.
What was like your favorite stuff to cover? What were the songs that you really liked a little bit like to play?
We played probably Van Halen, Bob Seger.
Yeah.
So you were playing rock and roll.
Oh, yeah.
Bob Seger and the Silver Bullet Band.
No.
Please come to Boston.
That's
right. Dude, when you look like that, you don't play those kinds of songs.
I mean, I don't even have to sing. You just stand up there and hold a guitar, right?
That clearly got me far.
Got you all the way to L.A.
Yeah.
Van Nuys, let's be honest. Got you to Van Nuys.
So what was your first, you were working, was the theater in L.A.? When you were working in theater, movie theater.
Oh, with the movie. Yeah, it was in L.A. Yeah.
So you came to L.A., you get an apartment with your buddy. Then what happens before you starved?
Before we starved, I went to music school. I went to for recording engineering and also took composing and arranging classes and vocal classes. And a guy who I ended up playing in a band with came to the music school and they were looking for a singer for their band. And so he got my number from somebody at school or whatever. And so I started playing that band and worked at the movie theater after school and did tons of odd jobs, like did the musician thing for several years.
You gotta have a resume like that. But music was it. That was the path you were going down. You were going to be a professional popcorn maker in a theater somewhere.
Yeah, no. But
that was not
to do in my life.
Part of the point.
I don't know. I think I was either like incredibly motivated to do that or just incredibly stupid. I'm not sure exactly.
And how soon before the gigs started?
Before the gigs? Yeah, like playing in bands and stuff? Right away. Actually, yeah, they had already been playing. These guys had already been playing in the LA area for probably a couple of years.
So you were joining an existing group out there.
Yep. Yeah.
And how did that happen? You're in Indiana. How'd they find out about you?
They found me after I came to music school out here in LA.
Okay.
And yeah. And worked with Tommy Fields.
Tommy Fields.
I got to put that in front of my name.
You do.
V.
They don't say A Tommy Fields.
He's Tommy Fields.
All right, you've won Song of the Year for a couple of songs, Only God Knows and Under the Rainbow. All right, tell me about those songs and how you ended up getting Song of the Year out of those two.
Under the Rainbow, I actually wrote after my first daughter was born. And it was just a inspiring song about her seeing the world through, what did I write? That was a long time ago. Why did I write that?
I remember it was about her, really.
It was a big deal at the time, but now not so much.
Not so much anymore. You should probably warn her in advance about this podcast.
Skip it. It's not that good, honey.
Fast forward. The funny thing is that song is like, it was out. I can't remember if it ever got placed on a TV show or not, whatever, but I remember one time I was like, just for the fun of it back then, like when Google first started happening, Google my name, every once in a while to see like what would come up. And that song got placed in a Mitsubishi car commercial in like Taiwan or something. And it was amazing to hear in another language and then hear my song like, but I didn't know about it. I was like, how did
you were getting paid.
So then I started emailing and calling all my people, you know, that,
hey, we got to
like, wait a second,
you've had songs placed in like Grey's Anatomy, and you wrote the theme song for Liza Schlesinger's comedy.
Uh-huh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Hey, she's hilarious. How did you get to did you have a relationship with her?
No,
not that kind of did you know her?
Could you make one up? We'd really like to hear about it.
We'd like tickets to her special too. Can you do that?
It's how this business works. It's like you work with people. There were people who had music library companies that I would work with, and we would write music for Scandal promos or whatever TV shows were popular at the time. You know? And it was a connection through one of them. And so they brought me in to write an original piece for her. So I got that gig.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Okay. You were front man for a number of bands. And I read that you came very close to being the lead singer for the Velvet Revolver.
That's tell me
how that almost came together and why it didn't.
What a gig that would have been.
That would have been gig, and I probably wouldn't be sitting here talking to you.
Your career would have gone a completely different
way. No, I don't mean it that way. I'd probably be dead.
Are any of them alive?
But but were he alive, he would not have done this podcast.
If you would have been playing me on stage, like the suicide. Oh, God, that went dark.
It's a tough business.
Yeah, it is.
Rock and roll's a tough business.
Oh, man, yeah. It's wild. Yeah, it's even coming across those guys.
They were living on the wild side.
And they
at the rock and
that
roll
point,
business.
Yeah, they had said that they want to stay clean more and like they weren't into doing the drug thing anymore, which they both, I think Duff and Slash, I think, both almost died, I think, at one point.
There was more than one. Slash had a few examples, yeah. Yes.
But it was crazy. Yeah, I was at that point, I was in Costa Rica, and no cell phones or anything. I was just disconnected. And then I came back and had 10 messages from Duff and Slash on my voicemail. And they were contacting the guy who was running the website for a band that I was in at that time, too. And he told me the story. It was funny. I think Slash had called him up or whatever.
Hey, it's like, we're looking for Tommy Field, blah, 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 whatever. And he's like,
yeah, where's Axel? Whatever.
Just on that one.
That is so awesome. I can't even imagine hearing that message.
Oh, this is Slash.
Yeah, okay.
Isn't it Mr. Slash?
Mr. Slash. That's how we know
him. Until you get to know him a little better, it's got to be Mr. Slash.
It didn't happen.
No, I talked to Duff and Slash like tons before that and then jammed with them and wrote with them for probably, I don't know, maybe a month and a half. And there was a place called Mates Rehearsal Studios in North Hollywood, whatever. It's a rock and roll rehearsal area. Like one of my old bands used to play there all the time. It's like super fun place, but we would rehearse there and it just didn't. Slash was kind enough to say, yes, we just decided to go in a different direction and their different direction was Scott Wallins.
Hey, whatever. It worked out okay for them.
Yeah. But that was super fun. It was like that one of the, it seems obvious to say, but like I played in rock bands with some really amazing players. Like one of the guys I used to play with is the bass player for The Who now. And another guy is a drummer. They've all played with Shakira and just tons of people. So they've all been like super talented guys. But I have to say like that band, there was like some magic that they had. It was like, being in a room, in the same room, playing music with them was just like an awesome. And it would have been a great gig, but that's healthier for me.
Their name is on here somewhere, but we're glad you stayed alive and you're here.
It's definitely a healthier life path.
How much time do you spend, if any, performing on stage now?
Hardly at all.
Do you miss that?
Not really, honestly.
We have an inn at the Plaza Theater. We can get you.
I'd love to go there.
I can't get you tickets, but I might be able to get you on a stage. I mean, like, you got to bring a show, pal. No free rides. Gas, grass, or ass. Get on stage.
So you're not performing?
No, I spend most of my time just scoring movies or I do commercials, just whatever pays money, honestly.
It sounded like you guys made a decision a few years ago to move a little bit away from the excitement and energy of LA and come out to the desert, but the excitement and energy keeps pulling you back.
Yeah, a little bit. Like we definitely go into LA to get juice or to have meetings, that kind of stuff. But I don't know, we really like it out here. It's so relaxing. You know, it's this one thing. I feel like scoring movies can be like stressful depending on the deadlines and who you're dealing with, whatever. And so being in the city already has a certain amount of stress. And so that on top of that, right. Like, puts you in a, so being out here, your stress level is like way lower. And so when you go through your stressful moments, it's not as big of a deal.
And are you doing this from home?
No.
So you're working from one of the quietest areas in the valley. Yep. You never hear any noise over
Hardly
there.
Hardly ever.
Yeah. Unless it's me falling down a rock or something. What was it about that area that drew you? Because it's a very unique and very special area.
Yeah.
What kind of drew you there?
We put in offers on a couple of other houses, like in Palm Desert area or whatever. And at that time, everything was going for cash, like cash. So we were losing
7-day closes.
Exactly. Yeah. So we were like, ah, God, like is not in the cards, whatever. So we ended up having lunch at the La Quinta Resort and found
this there's your down payment.
Exactly.
The lunches
the foods aren't cheap. I know. It's funny when we go back to LA and eat, we're like, oh my God, it's so much cheaper.
Is it really?
It is.
Would it be cheaper for us to drive to LA to have dinner?
It might.
Depends on where we go.
But that house happened to pop up. And so it was almost by default in a way. The area is, we love the area. But it just happened, the timing was, the house just happened to go back on the market at that time. And we came in and it just worked out. So
it happens kind of by default.
It was an accident.
You and Nikki, a blended family.
Uh-huh.
You had how many?
Two girls.
Yeah. Two girls.
Yeah.
And she has?
None.
None.
We tried to have kids, but didn't.
So, and how old are your kids?
22 and 19.
Oh, wow.
We're both in Boston now.
Yeah. You're both in Boston?
Yeah. The oldest one, Ella, just graduated from Emerson Film School last spring. And she's
That's a great
doing
school.
Her thing. Yeah, yeah. And the youngest, Taya, is at Berklee School of Music. Right now, so
you got to be pretty proud with
that. Yeah, I tried to convince them not to go into this business.
You tried to talk them out of it.
Yeah, but they if Slash offers you a job.
That's right.
There ain't no.
Remember, some of this stuff is fucking brutal, girls. And
totally. So,
when did you and Nikki get together? And how did you guys meet?
We actually first met. She had been out here 6 months. At this point, this was,
oh my God,
I can't even remember, 25 years ago, probably. And she was working with a guy that I played in a band with, guitar player, and they actually created a band together. So we knew each other tangentially for many years or whatever. And then we both separated from our partners around the same time and then connected after that, started playing music together or whatever.
Ever since,
yeah.
What were the varying degrees of success in the projects that you guys were working in together, the band, and was it enough to keep you guys going?
No, not really. No.
I better start writing scores. Yeah, there wasn't big money with Captain Slick back in the day either. Yeah.
I'm telling you, re-enjoy Captain Slick.
True story. We made $100 a show, and we had four guys.
Okay.
I was the singer.
You didn't play an instrument?
When the guitar player left, they didn't want to split the money anywhere. They made me learn how to play the guitar.
No way.
Yeah. And I sucked at it, but we all got a few extra dollars.
Oh, man, so the $33 a show.
Back in 1912, that was a pretty
big deal.
It'd be a big deal now, too.
Probably would be.
The band life's not easy.
The band life is still, I know what some of the music scene out here, and a lot of places like to have live music, but it's tough because the restaurants don't want to pay a lot of money.
Totally. Back when we were doing the clubs and Sunset Strip and all that. It's
like the Viper Room and Whiskey Go.
Oh, yeah. All those, yeah. Key Club when it was around, House of Blues.
Nice.
A place called The Gig. Yeah. A lot of those places aren't around
anymore. No. My son's band played Whiskey.
Oh, yeah.
That was really cool. You were talking earlier about no cell phones and all of that stuff. My wife and I got a MySpace account when MySpace was popular. And the only reason we did, it was the only way we could stay in touch with our kids. They'd gone on a national tour. Huh? And so they called one day and they said, we're in St. Louis. I said, great, how's it going? Oh, fantastic. The club was great. We had a great time. We're just heading out. I opened up their MySpace. We almost got mugged by a meth head behind the club in St. Louis. Okay. So on their way back home, they're saying, we stayed in a campground in Denver.
Sure.
How was that? Oh, it was fantastic. We loved it. And I read on MySpace, we almost died in a campground in Denver. So, but Edmund, for my stays, I never
knew
what I did. We're doing.
Little story.
I still have that account, by the way.
Do you really?
I really do. It's actually some of the only places I can go back and hear some of my son's old music because they had loaded it up on there.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah, it was really cool. Yeah, I live vicariously through them.
What, does he still play music?
Or it was like both of my sons. No, they've moved on.
Okay. Yeah, cool.
Yeah, they wanted to make some money too.
Yeah, exactly.
And neither one of them knew how to score. for our movies. So yeah.
You have to go in that direction. If I want to get in touch with either one of my kids, the way if I need to hear from them right away, I post a picture of them on Instagram that they don't like. They'll see it.
Exactly.
You need to take that down.
That's a good tactic.
That's a really good tactic.
Oh my God, I didn't think of that. Because there'll go times where, especially my youngest daughter, like, won't communicate with me on a timely manner. I'm like, I'm trying to figure out tactics.
Our youngest is 17.
Get her attention.
You got the way to do it. Our youngest is 17, and I can go a long time. Like, I'll text, hey, what are you doing? And nothing, crickets. But then I'm like, I know she hates this picture. I'll post it. Just trying to get your attention, Mr.
That's also.
I got 14-year-old granddaughters. They won't even look at me.
I can't wait until they're about 19 when they remember I'm still here. So you and Nikki got together. In L.A.
Those are my friends.
And did you put the band together right away?
When was this? I'm sorry.
You and Nikki, when you first got together.
We first got together.
What was the name of that band? Really cool.
The cardboard cutouts.
The cardboard cutouts.
Yeah, that's what it was. But yeah, it was fun. Yeah, it was super fun. What was your question again?
Sorry. The band came together.
Yeah, we had written songs off and on. Like, I had written some songs for the band that she was in. And so there was a little bit of a collaborative thing happening prior to that. But yeah, we would work on songs. Like, she would come over to my place and we'd write songs together. And I would do all the recording, whatever. And then she'd come in and lay her vocals down. And
that's a pretty special relationship. 25 years, you guys have lived and worked. You've been side by side all that time, and you still manage to do it, and you still manage to enjoy it.
Yeah. Yeah. Still manage to enjoy music or her? Like, which one he's supposed to do?
Well, I wasn't going to separate it like that. Which ones do you enjoy most, Tommy?
Her, obviously. Now, obviously, Nikki can't listen to this podcast either.
This is going to be a heavy edited episode. 9-minute episode.
That's right. It's amazing, like, how with the TV show and the music, being creative has brought us together in a really cool way. And it's cool, like, I'm working on a cue for a film or whatever, and I'm, like, not sure about it or whatever. I'll have her come in, and she has musical ears, too, and she lets me, gives me her honest feedback, and then I'll be mad and be like,
no, that's not true.
Like, that is, I know she's right.
That's terrible.
Damn it.
This is not my best work.
Is this what you were actually going to provide?
You're not actually going to say that.
What you guys have brought to the Valley here has been pretty cool. Just watching you guys moving around through social media and stuff is really enjoyable.
Yeah.
You seem like you've been here forever.
I love it out here. I don't know. It feels like home. Really now. And the weather that we're having right now. So I went for a run this morning. When I talked to my mom on the phone, she's like, yeah, it's, what was it, 1 or 2 degrees, I think, in India.
They're still back in Indiana.
Yeah. Makes you want to thank a meteorologist.
Exactly.
Thank you, Patrick.
You're very welcome. I take no credit for the good weather because I don't want to take blame for the bad weather.
And you know I do.
I'm merely just the messenger.
Tommy, this is so cool. It's rubbing the hell out of you for the last few months to get on here.
So
I apologize.
No, it's all good. I love it. Thank you for having me. It's super fun.
Yeah. I told Kay she couldn't come in because I needed you to focus on us to get for this hour. She'll be it later.
I think it would have added something to the podcast if Kay had been sitting there next to him, maybe just stroking his hair or
walk over and sat next to her.
For like their football movies. They've been partnering with the NFL the past couple of years, so I've been scoring their movies. They're big time travel movies. So this will be one of their big ones. It's a Halloween Carol, which they're taking a Christmas Carol.
Yeah.
And making it a Halloween movie instead of a Christmas movie, which I read the script. The script is pretty good and should be a super fun movie to score.
We need to connect Tommy with Ron Oliver, who directs it.
Actually scored one of his movies.
Oh, okay. Really?
And we don't need to connect there.
Yeah. We did a movie, this was several years ago, it was called Christmas Everlasting, is what it was.
Yeah, he does a lot of Christmas. Yeah. He's their Christmas guy.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite ones, too. Like, we really did a more of an ambient, like, a lot different for that network. That the score for that was.
Do you run into him here in the Valley?
No, I haven't. No,
Patrick.
I reached out to him and
get this going.
We're just.
We just need to
yet.
Bring Patrick in. And
are you guys friends? Or
yes.
Yeah. Oh, no kidding.
Yes.
That's cool.
But you're going to be drinking a lot heavier. I just wanted.
Great.
You to know.
I see martinis in his Facebook posts all the time. So.
Yeah. We were out for cocktails on Friday.
Oh, you were?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Oh, yeah.
He just woke up.
Ron might have. Ron had considerably more cocktails on Friday than I did. But it started at 11, in all fairness. And I didn't start until 11:15. So it was... I was working on Friday. I didn't... All right. Tommy Fields, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
It is called A Halloween Carol. And so how, when can we look... Around Halloween.
Yeah, that one will be around Halloween. And then right after that,
about halfway into that question, I realized that's a dumb question.
Easter, huh?
And how many people are in your quartet?
You were asked that question.
I did. Yes, I did.
Can you ask that on?
No, I asked, the question I actually asked, there were these guys and it was a barbershop quartet.
Okay.
And they were having a big convention for their 25th anniversary of the organization. I said, so how many years have you guys been doing this?
The guy looked at me like,
25.
That's Tommy, funny. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
We need to get Tommy and Nikki on together.
That would be super fun. We'd love to do it.
It really would be fun.
Thank you so much for listening to this edition of Big Conversations Little Bar. You can find us wherever you find your podcast. Our thanks to the McCallum Theater. Our thanks to Skip Page and his team here at Little Bar. They have kept the soda water flowing.
I'll get you a real drink, man.
I'm hammered.
But be sure to subscribe so that you never miss an episode. On behalf of Randy and John and our guest, Tommy, thank you all very much.
Big Conversations, Little Bar is a production of the Mutual Broadcasting System. This podcast is available in audio and video format. Visit our website at www.bigconversationslittlebar.com. New episodes are released every Monday. Athletes and dreamers, stars of the screen, leaders and builders, and all in between. Little bar at Big Conversations, Little Bar.